Welcome to part two of our conversation with Tanner Rutledge about talking with the dead. Let's talk about, we were talking about thought forms very briefly earlier, and sometimes that developing a personality, that's an interesting concept there. I mean, it's almost kind of implying that the living can haunt the living by their energy and what they're putting out there. Do you believe that sometimes the manifestations or the communications that we're getting are not dead people? They're not demons. They're not angels. It's literally our energy that has somehow manifested itself elsewhere.
I think it's possible. The big attraction to this field and to investigating the paranormal in general is because there's so much that's unknown. It's really the last frontier that anyone can look into. And when I say anyone, I mean like anyone that's got a recorder or who is curious. There's questions out there that need an answer. And when it comes to thought forms, if we look back in the 1970s to the Philip experiment, the Toronto Parapsychological Research Society conducted an experiment where they created a fictional character. They called him Philip. I don't remember the last name they gave him, but he was from the 1600s. And they gave him this backstory with a tragic past that eventually led to his suicide. And they tried to communicate with him. During the experiment, they didn't get results until they dimmed the lights and until they started doing the theatrics to really get the group into a state and into a mood where I guess they were more susceptible to their subconscious. They were able to get carried away by their imagination or by what was going on in the actual experiment. And they started to get actual communications with Philip, with rapping and furniture levitating. And at one point actually I believe Philip actually manifests. And this experiment was repeated several times. They had an entity named Lilith. A couple of entities. There was one in Australia, and it's been redone a few times, and it shows that the power of people to influence their environment goes far beyond us just picking up a hammer and smacking something. We're able to actually cause voices. We're able to actually cause levitations if we're in the right state of mind to do so. And I think a danger for investigators and for paranormal researchers going into different cases is a lot of us go in there with the belief that something is there, and it's a strong belief, and we're recreating those same environmental triggers and those same environmental settings that were present in the Philip experiment. And we could very well be all focused on the same entity and causing manifestations and causing hauntings sometimes.
Sure. I mean, and it's such an interesting concept. What is that then that is manifesting, though? I mean, is it just our energy that's being put out there? I mean, you'd almost think that it'd have to be attaching to something that would be on the other side that is using that to come back at you. Or is it not? Can it literally just be just kind of the essence of all this energy from all these different people and all these different thoughts that somehow, you know, it just collects and here's what you get?
I think it could be both. With the Philip experiment, the being itself had knowledge of its time, but it didn't have knowledge outside of the I hope I'm saying this in a way that's not super confusing. So the entity itself didn't have knowledge of events outside of the knowledge of the group as a collective.
Okay.
So the entity itself, its makeup, its personality, its preferences, and most importantly, the events and the things that it had knowledge of were the things that the group as a collective had knowledge of. So I do believe that in a lot of these situations, it's collective psychic energy that actually causes these beings. And when we're talking about thought forms and we're talking about tulpas, these stories, especially with the internet and with so many people around the world, there's the potential for someone to start a story, you know, creepypasta, Reddit, and have so many people worldwide start to believe in that and start to focus on that, that it could actually theoretically create a being.
Is it then always confined, though, to what essentially the living, the attributes that the living put on it? I mean, it's whatever we want to add to that narrative, it has to stay within those bounds. You know, essentially, it's like the idea of artificial intelligence and, well, it's going to learn its own shit eventually and take over. Or is it still, you know, going to have to stay within the confines of what we create?
See, that's a question that's being asked a lot, and no one knows. There's not really a way to tell if that's how it works. And these things are around for so long, and we know from the experiments that have been done that tulpas and thought forms can develop kind of their own preferences to things. And if they can develop their own preferences and start to form personalities, it's totally possible that it becomes sentient, and then it's not relying on the belief of other people. It's actually a being in its own right. So I think it's possible.
When something like that is created, and obviously this is all theoretical and you know, opinion based, but if something like that is created, and let's say you have a house that you have several people in and they believe it's haunted and there's fear there, and these thoughts, you know, especially if you have kids or something, it's going to be scary and all of the negativity that goes along with it. But let's say it's not a demon, it's not a ghost, it's literally something that was created by the residents there, and it just keeps, you know, snowballing itself bigger and bigger and bigger based on all this fear, and it just goes and goes and goes. How, I mean, is that something, once it's created, that the living can also destroy or kick out or get rid of?
So when it comes to things like that, if it's an entity that's created, if we're talking specifically about a tulpa, I think there are ways to deal with that in most hauntings, and getting not just tulpas, but in most hauntings that I've been involved with, where there's been some sort of negativity or the people don't want the entity in their house, whether it's a thought form, whether it's a negative spirit, negative entities feed on negative emotions. They feed on or they just like to be around all of that chaos that's caused by it. And once you deal with that root problem, say there's a home where you have a negative haunting and there are elements of a thought form or elements of a poltergeist. When you take that trauma out of the home, say you have an abusive parent, the family splits, the abusive parent leaves, and the family starts to heal. And suddenly all of that negative emotion and all of those negative things that were in the house, they dissipate. Eventually, with time and with counseling, they go away. And it's been my experience with negative hauntings, when there's counseling involved and when people look at what's really causing the strife in their regular lives, as the negativity in their day-to-day lives diminish, the negative activity associated with the haunting diminishes. You could look at that and say that the haunting was all in their head and it was a manifestation of the trauma that was taking place and a way for them to project that onto something else. But that doesn't explain a lamp flying around the house.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we're talking about EVPs and some of them coming across, you know, as Class A, very clear as day, you can understand what they're saying, and others not so much. Tell me, why do you believe that some do come across super clear and others, you know, with the assistance of some editing software or slowing it down or reversing it? Why is that there is such a difference sometimes in what comes across on just a straight ahead EVP?
I think that has to do with the strength of the entity that's trying to communicate, or the energy that they have to manifest. So in outdoor locations where there's not a lot of electronics to draw off of, we've had battery drains. We've had people start to feel kind of woozy and weak before we've had manifestations of EVPs. In homes, I think that there's just more of a power source for them to draw from. It could also be because maybe some of the entities are a bit older and they know how to get through better than others.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way when investigating to essentially give entities more strength to communicate and come through?
Not that I've found. Talking to psychics and those are that are more into the kind of mystic or metaphysical side,
mm-hmm.
I've heard people talk about allowing entities to drain from them in order to manifest and to cause things to happen. I haven't personally used that technique. I think getting involved in it it could possibly cause contamination as far as thought forms or mm-hmm. people projecting subconscious communications onto devices, which sounds insane, but
sure,
possibility when we're talking about thought forms.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because we hear so frequently an experience where, you know, batteries get drained very quickly. It's just kind of a random thought, and I'm curious if anyone's really ever done this, but go to the investigation and you're wanting to get, you know, clearer communications. What about putting some car batteries out there?
Right.
next to the recorder and things like that, that could be used as energy. And if they're sucking off of the cameras and they're sucking off of phones and other devices, you know, we're going out there sometimes with, you know, AA batteries or what have you. And those get drained very quickly. Why not offer up something that, okay, we understand that you seem to get strength out of this to communicate. Why aren't we going in with, you know, devices that are not necessarily intended for communication through that device, but to give them strength to communicate through the other devices?
Now, I have seen investigators that will set up flashlights mm-hmm. and EM pumps to flood the area with electromagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen any sort of positive feedback from that that we wouldn't get from not using it.
Sure.
A thing with EM pumps, and this is what a lot of people use EM pumps for, but high or altered electromagnetic fields can cause hallucinations, and they can cause you to hear and see things or feel things that actually aren't there, mm-hmm. Which is one reason I don't use them. But I think people have been trying it, but it's like everything else in this field. It's so hit or miss. There's not really a way to prove that there's like a direct correlation between putting out a car battery and giving it something to feed on and getting stronger EMFs. I mean, to test that, you'd have to do it consistently over several years mm-hmm. and monitor the quality of the EVPs and the quality of the communication that you had against controlled settings where you weren't using that. That'd be an interesting experiment, though.
Yeah, it's just a thought. Where do you think this is going in terms of being able to communicate with the other side? There's obviously a lot of equipment out there now and very interesting ways and interesting results that people are getting that you know, it borders on, you know, two-way communication fairly regularly. You know, there's things that we never would have thought would be possible several years ago. Now we're starting to see it. I mean, 20 years from now, where do you think this field is going to be in terms of communicating or understanding what's going on with what we're communicating with that's on another side?
It kind of depends on who is going to get involved in the field.
Mm-hmm.
If we have more engineers, if we had more, use the term proper scientists that were in the field and seriously studying this, I think we would see more results and we would see more movement. Even with the equipment that's been put out recently, it's become a lot more convenient. When I first started, I had to carry a big boxy EMF meter, temperature gauges, and basically a tool belt full of different gadgets. And now you've got like the Eddy Plus ghost hunting equipment that is like five gadgets in one fits in your hand. So most of the leaps in the technology have been more about convenience. Now with the invention of the ghost box, that's a major leap forward in spiritual communication. But I really don't see the needle moving much more from that in the next one or two decades.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Tanner Rutledge about talking with the dead. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program. And thank you to you for supporting our program and keeping us on the air. We could not do this without you. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.